Halloween for today.
Nice.
We got a little bit more stuff adding to our movie marathon. We'll start doing a Final Four bracket pretty soon.
Well, yeah, first of all, I'll dig up VHSs that I have too. Got to throw in that Attack of the Return of the Killer Tomatoes with George Clooney.
That's it. Well, you mentioned you were putting together some prize packs. Where are we at with that? Like,
I got all kinds of cool books, Frightening Lightning cars, diecast cars, tons of collectibles, little UFO collectibles, just all kinds of cool stuff that we'll be able to throw in with the packs. Posters, full-size movie posters, all kinds of cool stuff.
Awesome. I think what we'll end up doing is just having a prize pack scroll with a list with the name of the sponsor on it. And when we call it out, we'll name off some of the stuff that's in it, and then we'll just break out this big-ass box full of cool stuff.
Well, what I did is I actually have those cardboard tubes I have for posters. I got a ton of the empty ones put aside for us.
Sweet.
Just for that.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Scary Dad Podcast.
Hello, hello.
This is episode 43, where we're going to talk about the life and times of the Master of Horror. Well, one of the Masters of Horror, Mr. Wes Craven.
Yes, and he'll definitely be called a legend.
Looking into some cool subjects for August here, Mr. Craven came and went in the month of August.
Yep.
So we're going to dedicate the first August podcast to one of our favorite guys. The episode's dropping on August 7th, 2017.
I just had my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Forgot to get you something, but I will. And technically, today is the middle of summer. You think after June's gone and July's gone, and now you're in August, you're two-thirds of the way through it. But oh, no, no.
Oh, no.
You still got another half of that,
Texas.
That hot heat left to go.
I've had to sweat on Halloween many, many times.
So Halloween's so crazy. Like, the holidays here are so crazy. For those of you who are not from Houston, the girls in the slutty Halloween costumes. I've been to parties where, you know, it's so hot they're basically in bikinis, and then the very next year it's so cold that everybody's like dressed up in Easter yeah. Bunny costumes because they just can't stand to do anything else, you know. And then, you know, it's so cold on Halloween, but then it's hot on Christmas or
Thanksgiving.
Vice versa.
Yeah, yeah. Thanksgiving is warm and everything.
You know, whenever you're outside, or it's too hot to go outside on Thanksgiving or Christmas.
The winters don't last long here, that's for sure.
It's not cool. So anyway, get yourself a cold glass of iced tea or a beverage. Crank up the AC. We just had our AC fixed. God, it was miserable. God, poor guy, dude. He lost like 8 pounds in one day.
I used to do that work. Trust me.
It was a one-day job. He lost 8 pounds from the day he... So, let's get right into the old business. 1782, on this date, George Washington orders the creation of the badge of military merit for soldiers who were wounded in battle. Later, it was changed to the Purple Heart.
Yep.
1789, the U.S. Department of War was established. So, we're right on track.
It's a giant machine now.
All right, 1794. George Washington invokes the Militia Act of 1792 to suppress the Whiskey Rebellion in Pennsylvania. So, all these guys go to war, nearly 10-year war,
wow.
Over a 3% tax on tea.
Yep.
Because taxation without representation is grounds for revolution.
Right.
Then they turn around and they ride down and attack a bunch of Pennsylvanians for like a 14% tax on whiskey. Ridiculous.
Yep.
You know, but hey.
It's the way it works.
The bad part about it was a lot of those guys were American Revolution veterans who were not getting any kind of benefits from the government because the government owed money. And so they didn't think they needed to pay the tax because, hey...
You just got to fight your war.
Yeah, I just fought your war for you. But, yeah, it didn't end well. And they ended up having to pay the tax. Oh, well. It's fun while it lasted, that whole liberty thing.
Yeah.
It's 1783 through 1794, so 11 years. Then we were on our way to... to the haves and the have-nots. Yes. The elites.
Taxes. Taxes drive me crazy. When my son learned about taxes, he told him before he ever started working, once he started working for a living, he realized just what it was, and damn. Mm-hmm. It woke him up quick.
Oh, yeah. All right. Happy birthday, notable births. This date in 1955, Mr. Wayne Knight. Hello, Newman. From Jurassic Park, 30 Rock, and Seinfeld.
Man, his action figure from Jurassic Park. Ever show it to you?
Nuh-uh.
I got it around here somewhere, but he's like pencil thin.
All right, 1958, Bruce Dickinson from Iron Maiden. So, crank it up.
Great, great classic band there.
Happy birthday this date in 1960 to David Duchovny.
Thanks,
Fox Mulder.
Yes. I found another case of those action figures, actually.
X-Files,
yeah. Nice.
And on this date in 1975, Charlize Theron. God, she's hot.
Yes, she is.
So gorgeous.
Yes, sir, indeed.
And on this date in 1957, we lost comedy great Oliver Hardy. Part of Laurel and Hardy. That was it for him. That was it for notable deaths in the history.
So, oh, okay.
So kind of short and sweet today. That was okay. Old business. You ready to talk about new business?
Yeah, I think so. Got a few things we could throw up there. First, for those of us that follow, for those of you that follow our Twitter feed, I tweeted about the Clown Hotel recently as a possible destination. Well, you can own it. The nice. Terrifying Clown Hotel is now up for sale. Located in the small mining town of Tonopah, between Las Vegas and Reno, Clown Hotel is for sale. It's a hotel dedicated to clowns. It's fully decorated with clowns. If you're scared of clowns, do not go to this hotel. It's been described by Travel Nevada as it's like From Dusk Till Dawn conspired with Stephen King's It to create a real life horror film.
Nice.
It is available for sale right now for the price of $900,000, and it's yours. James Cameron has announced that he plans to reinvent the Terminator with a new trilogy of movies he's going to be putting out, because James Cameron doesn't give a shit. He does his thing.
Well, you know, the Terminator kind of went off the rails.
Yep.
It seems like every Terminator movie after the second one made the first and second one completely pointless.
So once he stopped directing it, they went pointless.
Yeah, it just went with all, just with the time and the fate and all of that stuff. And you know, it takes a little suspension of disbelief anyway for that whole time travel thing, because it's that whole paradox. If you go back in time to stop something from happening, then you'll just get caught in a loop, because there would have been no reason for you to go there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they had to do it, but then it just got damn confusing.
Yeah. Yeah, the story arc kind of went crazy. Went off the deep end. Well, he's in discussions right now with David Ellison, who owns the rights to the Terminator franchise, about doing a new set of movies. Cameron reveals that he doesn't like any of the Terminator sequels and was giving his endorsement as a friendly gesture to Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah. I think it's fairly widely known that I don't have a lot of respect for the films that were made later, Cameron says. I was supportive at the time in each case for Arnold's sake, because he's a close friend. He has been a mate of mine since 33 years ago, so I was always supportive and never too negative. But they didn't work for me for various reasons. So he wants to go ahead and try to reinvent it. And
even Terminator 2?
Yeah.
He made Terminator 2.
Yeah, but he still...
He didn't like it?
Nope.
It's too bad. It was a badass movie.
Yeah. Some exciting news out of San Diego Comic-Con, in my opinion, one of the more exciting things. McFarlane has announced that Blumhouse will be producing his live-action adaptation of Spawn that's going to be coming up. So
what are you doing, Spawn?
Blumhouse is known for Get Out, Insidious, Paranormal Activity, and The Purge. So it is going to be a horror film. Which is what it should be. He previously explained that the new film will be a dark and hard rated R, and it will be about the boogeyman. It will be about something scary. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's one of those we've talked about, with like RoboCop, and you know, which RoboCop was never intended. I don't really imagine whenever they were sitting around in the room talking about RoboCop, they were like, hey, let's make it a hard R, super violent, and then we'll make toys later. I think it was just kind of organic, and that's just what people did in the 80s.
Right.
But Spawn, so McFarlane was at the time, and probably still is now, one of the most famous comic book writers of all time.
Well, yeah, he had the biggest comic book at the time.
Because,
it was huge.
With Spider-Man. And then he goes off and he makes Spawn. And Spawn, he did for Image. It was independent company. He could do whatever he wanted to with the art and the story. But Spawn was not Spider-Man.
No.
Spawn was dark. It was a story of a lost soul. Under his mask, he's burnt. He's condemned to hell. He's condemned to walk the earth and track down other lost souls. And he's fighting demons. And it's really, really violent.
Yeah.
It's very dark and it's very bleak. And there's really no good... I mean, it's a good story, but there's no silver lining. There's no happy ending. There's no... he gets the girl in the end.
He's a hellspawn.
But so then they make this movie and immediately start hitting the toys with toys. And it's like, dude, kids don't need to be watching this.
They had to sell toys, man.
So maybe if and I even remember the movie being kind of cheesy and such.
That there was.
It was toned down in such a way that, you know.
It was cool to see a live action Spawn, of course, and the special effects were just amazing.
Right.
But it was very much toned down from the actual storyline.
But if he was able to just do what needed to be done, that would be incredible. Props to Deadpool for proving that a solid R-rated comic book movie could not only succeed, but succeed, like, thrive, do right. really, really well. They don't all need to be that way. Superman doesn't need to be Spawn, but Spawn needs to be Spawn. Right. You know, so I'm glad for that. That's awesome. Yes.
Okay, and last but not least, you seen the Jigsaw trailer?
No, I have not. It's on my list of things to watch, and every time I go to push the button, somebody says, Daddy. I end up not seeing
it. Well, yeah, it's definitely a trailer that you don't want the kids to see. Because they show some of the new kills that are going to be going on, which is pretty cool. All
right.
One of them, which I found very exciting, is they show these circular saws sticking halfway out of a wall with a chain running into a hole right above it. And there's a bunch of people with the chain around their neck and buckets on their head. The chains start pulling in as the saws turn on. So yeah, so essentially, you're going to get your head cut off if you don't do something before it gets down to you, which looks like a pretty cool... The new kills look awesome. excuse me. There's another one with people's hands stuck with three syringes on top. Needles are already in there. Plungers are set to go off. Not sure what they're going to have to do with what's in the needles, but that's another one that they have that's going to be coming up. Silo of Death. These people are stuck in a grain silo, essentially. Grain is falling, you know, preparing to bury them alive. All of a sudden, pitchforks and stuff start falling from the top.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know what's going on with that one. Another cool one is the Sawnado, where imagine the funnel-type device used for dogs to keep them from... You know, gnawing at their flesh and everything. Or one of those in a larger scale with saws in it slowly coming down towards where your head
like
is.
Like one of those things you drop the penny in for the
disabled kids. Exactly what we're looking at. So, yeah, Saw is going to be coming, they're going to be coming back and they're bringing it for sure, man. It's going to be an exciting movie to see. So.
Awesome.
And last but not least, and the reason we're talking about the subject we're talking about today, this is the 40th anniversary of the original Hills Have Eyes. Written and directed by Wes Craven.
Based on the Shawnee Bean cannibalism story.
It was his follow-up to The Last House on the Left. And it was a pretty rough movie. Especially, you know, it came out right around that time of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Mm-hmm. And he was essentially trying to ride that same...
we'll get into it in a second. But, you know, Last House on the Left wasn't... Little House on the Prairie.
Well, yeah, of course. This is true. But yeah, so we're here to talk about our boy.
When I was at Frightmare, I was taking a leak next to Michael Berryman. That dude's tall.
Oh, yeah. Yes, he is. He is very, very tall.
That's where you'd see the celebrities if you didn't want to stand at the tables. Hang out in the bathroom, they'd be through eventually. Not creepy or anything.
Yeah, and he talks about the inspiration he took from the Sonny Bean clan, actually. Sonny Bean was said to be the head of a 48-member clan in Scotland, anywhere between the 13th and 16th centuries, reportedly executed for the mass murder and cannibalism of over 1,000 people. Him and his huge inbred family. And it's pretty much, you know, the influence for Hills Have Eyes is taken directly from that. I mean, mm-hmm. It's an inbred family living out in the wasteland of the desert looking for folks. It's a scary movie, man. The remake even holds up as well. It's a crazy movie.
I'm afraid that if I was going to be a cannibal, I'd be more like Chud. I'd go to the city where there's people. I wouldn't hang out in the desert. There's nobody out there.
So, now you haven't seen the original Hills Have Eyes, or you haven't seen it in a
while. I haven't seen it since. So, getting into Mr. Wes Craven, like I said, my buddies and I, when I was in probably the 10th grade, 10th or 11th grade, so that would have been 25 years now. So that would have been 15, 16, 17, 25 years. We started watching a bunch of horror movies. So all the Fridays, all the Nightmares, all the Halloweens that were available at the time, as well as classics like, you know, Hills Have Eyes and Last House on the Left, you know, just all of that stuff. So I've seen it, but it's been 25 years since I've seen it. I've seen the remake. They're kind of stuck in my head. I don't remember what is what. So I know that's one of your favorite movies, so yeah, you can take the lead on that one.
Well, one interesting thing is, you know, the baby that they're trying to save from the family and everything. And in the movie, she ends up, you know, being saved and everything. That wasn't supposed to happen originally.
Oh, no.
Craven had it written where she was going to be eaten by Papa Jupiter. And she was going to be gone. And the cast actually revolted against it. And Berryman refused to film the scene if it was going to end that way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and totally changed the way that movie ended. It ended up being a happy ending in the end. It wasn't supposed to be that way. But, I mean, The Hills Have Eyes is the story of a very dysfunctional, needless to say, family living out in the hills. They trap this family. They steal their baby. They kill some of the family members, and the rest of the family members are trying to get the baby back. And they just go on a murderous rampage. There's a bunch of cannibals. It's just a crazy, crazy movie. Exceptionally crazy. And that was his second movie, of course, as I said. We can go ahead and start on the on the list with The Last House on the Left in 1972.
Right. So Last House on the Left, that's also had a remake. A lot of these movies have had remakes.
Yeah.
And I have to wonder, because as you get down the list, there's certain movies that it's like Craven's fought the studio for control, and in a lot of cases he lost control.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about a scene, but like of the franchise movie, right, of the movie. And then he was blamed for it was either he was blamed for it or whatever, but whenever he took the helm back, like he made it good again.
Right. And that's very obvious in the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise,
right,
which we'll get to.
But like Last House on the Left, so if you've never seen it, 1972, spoiler alert, it's about a bunch of kids. They break into a house and they rape a girl. And do they kill her, or they just beat her within half of her, within inch of her life?
I thought she dies.
And then her parents come after the gang.
Right.
And torture them through the whole rest of the movie.
Right.
And it is brutal, and it is realistic, and it is quite visceral and kind of hard to take. I mean, it's torture porn before they actually had torture porn.
It's pretty crazy about it.
But you're rooting for them, because the way they hurt this poor girl, you're like, they deserve every little, every cut and scrape that they're getting dished out. Like, it's cathartic to watch these kids get tore up.
Right. Well, what's interesting about, if you look at Wes Craven's filmography, remember that song I was telling you about where kill people, burn shit, fuck school, where it actually got progressively better?
Uh-huh.
His movies get more tame as time goes on, which usually you see the opposite. You know, people start getting comfortable, they start, you know, trying to push the envelope and everything. He actually toned it back a little bit as he got older and started making more movies, and it may be to appease
to
get a maid, right.
Because so we've talked, you know, we talk about Last House on the Left, which I have to admit was not my favorite movie in the world. It's hard to watch. I don't like torture porn.
Right.
You know, I don't mind, and, you know, this is a horror podcast, so take it for what it's worth. But when I'm sitting here watching a movie, I much prefer a Friday the 13th scare quick kill.
Right.
I don't like a Hostel where...
Or Vacancy.
Right.
Vacancy is a good example of that.
Where they're just tied up and... tortured and psychologically fucked. I just, that does not, that doesn't float my boat.
Right.
There's so many other things. I love monsters and supernatural and even demonic, you know, but torture.
Well, those are the ones.
Stuff just really doesn't, I just don't enjoy it.
The realistic torture stuff is the stuff that gives me nightmares. Well, right. That's the stuff that scares me.
Well, it's scary, but it's...
It's realistic.
It's realistic. Yeah. I don't sit there and be like, yay, let's get a popcorn and watch this.
Right. So I enjoy watching them. Enjoy the scares. Strangers, Vacancy, Hostel. But like I said, those are the ones that actually give me nightmares. Because that shit could really happen.
True.
That's what I always say after the movies, you know. Especially The Strangers. The Strangers is one of the ones that really, really creeps me out.
Just
I live out on 2 acres. There's no neighbors are going to hear me scream if I start screaming for help.
Right.
You know, I get trapped in this house and that's it. That's me.
You were home.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then he went from Hills Have Eyes to Swamp Thing.
Swamp Thing in 1982.
And I have just recently rewatched that. That one, when I was a kid, was in very heavy rotation on like HBO on just, you know, cable in the 80s.
Right.
And... with, in retrospect, I remember having certain scenes just kind of stuck in my head, and watching it again, there was a reason why. It's because they were quite visceral scenes.
Yeah.
Like him getting his arm cut off, mm-hmm. and it growing back whenever he could reach the light.
Him catching on fire. Running across the bridge and jumping in the water.
Right. The where they kill the kid, and then he ends up touching him and bringing him back alive. And her, too, where she's shot.
Yeah.
And, you know,
he heals her.
He heals her. And then, of course, the little...
The possum man is the one that always scared the shit out of me.
The little possum man jumping out from under the table.
Like, it's like, that was a big dude, and all of a sudden, it's a little creepy possum man.
So, but Swamp Thing, as a comic, has never... I mean, I've got early issues that Bernie Wrightson and Len Wein did. It was never it was always adult themed.
Yeah.
It was always a horror comic.
Right. Well, I mean, first appearance, you know, he saved the woman from being murdered by her fiance.
Right. So, you know, Swamp Thing, but there's this perception in Hollywood that if it comes from, this was a perception, if it was in a comic book,
it needed to be campy.
It needed to be campy. It needed to be, and you look, you know, probably riding on the heels of Superman from 78, you know, there's a bunch of comic book movies getting made. Swamp Thing was one of them. Hey,
right.
here's a property, let's run it. But it's horror. So, who better to make a horror comic than Wes Craven? A
little bit of trivia for you. Mm-hmm. The guy that played Swamp Thing, Dig mm-hmm. the Rock, he was also in a Bruce Willis movie. Small bit part. You ever saw Blind Date?
Yes.
You know the bouncer by the bathroom whenever he's looking for his date? That's Dig the Rock.
Nice.
That is Swamp Thing. That was one of his other roles. And he played Swamp Thing in everything, in the sequel and also in the television series.
Yeah. I mean, he's got that.
Rest in peace, Mr. DeRock. It's one man that I never got to meet. He brought my favorite comic book character to life.
It would be cool if they were to redo it. Like I said, with Swamp Thing, it was one of those things where, as a kid, it was scary. As a grown up, it's campy.
Yeah.
It kind of flip the switch.
Except for that possum man.
Possum man's still scary.
But like the arcane makeup at the end, where Arcane turns into this wolf-like creature, it was kind of shitty.
Yeah.
But then, Mr. Craven decided to redeem himself.
Well, see, that was, back to Swamp Thing, that was another thing that I never quite understood until later, watching it, but even as a grown-up, knowing who they are, the way it makes it seem whenever, what's her name? The girl, the woman, the main character.
Cable.
Cable, when she shows up to the lab, I don't think they ever introduce her as his sister.
No, well, what it is.
But you just assume that that's his wife. And then he's like showing off his thing, and then he turns around and starts kissing Cable right in front of his wife, and she's all shocked and like, oh. And you're like, what a dick.
Well, you know, if you watch the movie, she didn't find out it was his sister. Well, they went on the boat, and he started getting kind of hitting on her, you know, trying to be romantic about the swamp, and she was like, save it for your wife.
Yeah, that was...
Yeah, and then later on they go in, and that's when she's talking to the sister, And she's like, you know, the sister's talking about their father. She goes, your father? And she goes, yeah, he's my brother. And so she's like, oh, makes sense now.
But it's still just like that little cut scene where you're just like, dude, what a dick. You're just going to start making out with some random
Same
chick.
For your wife.
You're going to make out with some random chick right in front of your wife because you're excited? Like, so you deserve to get sent into the, like, caught on fire and sent into the swamp. All right, so then Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes.
Another one that's had a remake, but which failed miserably. Horrible, horrible, horrible thing.
Well, you know, he directed the first one and then kind of stepped away and directorial duties were taken away from him for a couple of sequels.
Well, he did the third one.
He produced, he didn't direct.
He was not involved in the second one.
Right.
The studio didn't want him back. They didn't want Robert Englund back. But
Robert Englund is Freddy Krueger.
Yeah. And
you know, when a young Robert Englund took Wes Craven's offer to be Freddy Krueger, he became Freddy Krueger for the rest of his life.
Absolutely. But they didn't want Wes Craven, and part two was kind of, well, it was shitty.
Mm-hmm.
It was the worst of the sequels. But that seemed to have happened, you know, like they got him in, they took control away from him, and then whenever he lost control, it kind of sucked, and then he came back.
Right. And they immediately decided to do a sequel once that movie came out.
Right.
Because that's the story I was telling Robert Englund when I asked him about where the original glove was. He told me, he said, well, we didn't think it was going to be a hit, so we just gave it to my agent. And we made a new one for the second movie.
Yeah, the new one was not as glovey.
Right.
In the second one, it was whatever he wanted it to be.
Yeah.
So he had the knives coming out of his fingers, and he had the drug, the syringes. He had just different stuff.
Right.
That one broke a lot of rules.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, that's another one that was an inspiration of a true story also, which we talked about in our true story episode, where Craven was reading an article about this kid that was complaining to his parents about nightmares he was having, how realistic they were, and they tried to get him some help and everything, and it just didn't work out, and the kid had a nightmare and died in his sleep. And that's where he took the inspiration for Nightmare on Elm Street.
Based on a true story.
Yep.
This one might be based on a true story. Have you ever seen Deadly Friend?
No.
Deadly Friend, I think, was a pretty bad flop, but it had Christy Swanson in it.
Okay.
We've talked about it before. Quick synopsis. There's a nerd. He has an AI robot that he made. So he's got this like little R2-D2 robot that follows him around, and it's very, very smart. And then he's got a neighbor girl, you know, teenage girl that lives across the street, and he got a crush on her and everything. And she's real sweet, but she's real sad. And then one night her father beats her to death, like pushes her down the stairs, and she ends up dying. And so the kid ends up stealing her body and then uploading the robot's consciousness into the girl. Like, I'm not exactly sure, because the robot looked kind of like Rosie from the Jetsons.
Okay.
It was like a blocky robot, you know, it's like very robot.
Right.
But somehow he got all of that metal into her skin, and, you know, so she was super powerful and super smart, and but it's not her. It's the robot.
Okay.
But the robot connects with her organic memories, so
it has her memories.
It has her memories. Okay. So she goes back and, like, kills her father and kills the evil neighbor next door and, like, just, you know. And but as she starts to rot, like, pieces of her face start falling off and revealing robot underneath.
God. I
remember seeing that when I was a kid, being like, oh, shit. And it is one of the greatest scenes in cinema history. So, I can't remember her name, but Throw Mama from the Train?
Yes, I don't remember her name either, but
She's the evil neighbor. And all she does is yell at everybody, and Christy Swanson's standing there, and she picks up a basketball and just flings it across the house and just hits her head, and the head explodes.
Jesus.
Good stuff. Wes Craven, man. Shot one of the better scenes.
he was a mastermind.
Absolutely. He knew what was scary.
Oh yeah, he knew how to make you jump. That's for sure. All right, so that was followed up. The next one that I have on my list, I kind of picked the ones that I wanted to see, was Serpent and a Rainbow.
Which well, Dream released, Warriors came
yeah,
next.
Yeah,
he came back.
Did he direct that one?
He directed that one.
Okay.
He came back for Dream Warriors, which is arguably the best Nightmare on Elm Street, even right. better than the first one, in my opinion.
The first one just kind of hangs with it because it's the first one, of course. You know, we get introduced. But Dream Warriors is definitely up there in the franchise. It's definitely above New Nightmare.
Well, he directed that one, too.
But in my opinion, you don't even know how I feel about New Nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So after Dream Warriors with Serpent and Rainbow, incredible movie. When you first see Serpent and Rainbow, you wonder if it's supposed to be a scary movie. When you first start watching it. And then it kicks in.
Then it becomes
It becomes a very scary movie. Yes, indeed, man. Story of voodoo in Haiti. You know, I was talking to my kids. And they're into anime and everything. And they started talking about these beings in some anime series they have. Is this person that collects people's souls. But they don't die. They're still zombie-like. It's like the exact same story as the Haitian voodoo. I told him, I said, well, you know, in Serpent and Rainbow, you know, there's a guy that is able to capture the people's souls, and they're under his control. He keeps their souls in a little jar.
Isn't he called the Soul Taker?
Soul Taker.
So
it sounds like he's going to talk about a rhythm and blues band, because he's like,
Soul Taker.
He waited for train. We'll tell you guys about what we're talking about sometimes. Don't worry. So yeah, he keeps the souls in jars. Apparently this anime series is almost the exact same thing, because they're not zombie-like in that they have their consciousness, they can talk and everything, but it's just, there's a guy that's controlling everything they do.
So let's do a quick aside, because you're talking about souls in jars.
Yep.
So I listen to a lot of podcasts, and this got nothing to do with Wes Craven, but Serpent in the Rainbow, Souls in Jars, whatever. There's this podcast, it was a story, and it's told from the first person, and it is perhaps one of the scariest stories I've ever heard. It sticks in my brain, and I'm like, oh my god. So basically, this guy, he was in a motorcycle accident, and he remembers being on his motorcycle, he remembers crashing, and he remembers waking up in the lab. He's in a jar, and he's got his brain and his eyes, and the doctor has perfected the chemical that'll keep him alive. And he doesn't have a body, but it's just the brain and the eyes. And the doctor keeps talking, or like the guy is narrating, like how the doctor keeps saying, well, they all think I'm crazy and whatever. And he keeps going over and like looking into the jar, and the guy can see the doctor through his disembodied eyes, just himself in a brain.
Right.
And the doctor's like, once I find a suitable host, I'm going to transplant you, and you won't die, you'll live, you know, whatever. And so he's all hopeful. The doctor gets a suitable host, and it's very Dr. Frankenstein, but then the doctor dies. Falls down on the floor. So then his partner and lawyers come in, and they don't know what to do with it, so they pack it all up. They just pack it all up into boxes and put it in a storage unit. And there's this guy in a jar with no appendages, just a brain and eyes in a jar in a box that's fully aware and can't die.
Sounds like Twilight Zone.
Ever. And it's just like, holy hell. This is like the worst thing I could ever think of. Anyway.
Sounds like a Twilight Zone episode.
Now imagine being your soul in a jar.
Right.
Imagine if it was a mason jar. You're sitting there floating around being like, well, my body's dead, but I can read ball backwards for the whole rest of my life. God.
That would be a pretty rough existence, to say the least. Now, was he able to communicate telepathically or anything with the doctor? Okay.
No, the doctor knew he was alive because he knew his serum worked. He was inside the serum.
Okay.
But, of course, the doctor never got to tell anybody that...
Yeah, whenever he said the doctor died, I was picturing Office Space, and I was thinking, you know, he had to go to work stuck in the way he was, and he couldn't change the way he thought and just didn't care anymore. All right. 1989. Shocker.
Boom.
Not quite the same kind.
Two in the pink, one in the stink.
Soccer wasn't. I didn't care for that movie too
much. No, that was a bad movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, its premise made sense. Haunted electric chair. But I just
definitely wasn't one of his best ones. So, and I don't know what you got next, but I got 1991 next. Do you have anything in between?
People Under the Stairs.
People Under the Stairs, yes. Young Ving Rhames in that movie. I love People Under the Stairs. I love the premise of it, and the storyline is just exceptional.
Big ass house where a kid can run around in the walls. Like, get you that guy.
With no tongue. He can't talk or anything, but he escaped from the rest of them. But the story of a brother and a very sadistic brother and sister. They have one little girl that they kidnapped that they call their daughter, and the rest of the kids that they have kidnapped, they've cut their tongues out and stick them under the stairs.
Sometimes, man.
And Ving Rhames decides to break into the wrong house. And he gets killed, and the young boy that he's using to help him break into the houses gets stuck in the house. And it's just a crazy movie, man. Then he escapes, but goes back to save the girl.
So another little aside, this is not as bad as finding a bunch of people trapped in a house with their tongues cut out. But have you seen that guy who drives around trying to pop thieves on YouTube?
No.
So first he gets a bicycle. Like, he goes to the ghetto, but he gets a bicycle and he packs the seat full of, like, he'll attach a car airbag to it.
I actually have seen that guy.
The guys start riding off on their airbag, on the remote, on their bike, and he remote control pops them in the butt.
Because he used to tie the bike off to, like, a tree to where they would take off and all of a sudden it would sling back.
He's got a new series now where he parks a U-Haul, he puts a bunch of stuff in there, and, like, the guy gets in, he closes the door on him, and then he's got a camera inside, he drives like really fast and then stops and like basically slams him around the inside of the truck.
It's messed up.
The dude's in there like, I'm gonna kill you, and he hits the brakes and like smashes head on the wall. He like disorients him so bad, then he like opens the door and then drives off, and the guy falls out the back.
Jeez. Him.
It's not as bad as People Under the Stairs, but can you imagine? You're like, oh man, I'm gonna get some shit.
Oh, shit.
You get taken 30 miles away, get your ass beat. Just left on the side of the road. Alright, let's talk about Scott's favorite movie.
1994's
The New Nightmare.
Yes.
So I didn't hate it. Like, I saw that one in the theater. I enjoyed it for what it was. I didn't think it was like super classic. It did have the kid that played Gage Creed in it.
Mm-hmm.
As the little kid that's getting possessed and haunted by Freddy is Heather Langenkamp's son, I believe.
Yep.
So, I mean, there's a lot of throwbacks to the original series, and, you know, it had that kind of... I do like the idea of that kind of the thought golem, where, you know, it's kind of like a psychic spell. Like, you write a story about a monster, and then the monster itself appears in real life.
Mm-hmm.
I do like that premise, you know, that Freddy wouldn't have existed, but Wes Craven wrote the story about him, and then it facilitated his actual existence.
Right.
So I do like that. I didn't think it was very well done.
It moved too slow. I fell asleep during it the first time I watched it. It never got my attention like the rest.
You know, it had a good premise.
Yeah.
But like I said, it was like I didn't hate it as much, but I was also wasted and saw it in the theater with a bunch of friends, and we all laughed about it. So,
right.
You know, that affects
you. Had fun with it.
That affects your views. But, hey, you know.
Well, seeing that foray, he decided to go ahead and step it up a notch in 1995 with Vampire in Brooklyn. Vampire in Brooklyn reminds me of Love at First Bite. Do you remember that movie?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was just a
George Hamilton.
Yes, it was just a bad vampire movie. The only good scene was when he, like I mentioned earlier, when he walked in the church with the foil on his shoes so that he wouldn't burn up and die. Yeah, Vampire in Brooklyn was an Eddie Murphy horror movie where he was a vampire with a perm. And the old boy from Different World, I can't remember his name right now, was kind of his Igor,
mm-hmm.
so to speak, and his body was decaying as the film was going on. I think he lost some fingers and stuff. And
you talking about Dwayne Wayne?
Yeah, Dwayne Wayne.
And did he have his flip up glasses?
Mm-hmm.
In the movie, when he didn't.
No, he didn't. But like, yeah,
wow.
It's one and the same. That's the guy. And then, you know, to me, horror kind of went into a glut for a while until this next movie came out. Now, are you in 1997 yet, or?
I'm at 96. Okay. Scream.
Well, yeah. Same thing. Scream. To me, Scream rejuvenated horror.
Yeah, it made horror very self-aware. Scream both revitalized and kind of screwed up the horror genre, because Scream itself was so smart in that it was self-aware. Like, they are all quoting horror movies at each other. So none of these kids are going to, like when he's like, I'll be right back. You know, it's like, they've all seen these movies. They're all aware of the rules, you know, and even Jamie Kennedy's like, no, the rules. Like, but to have two villains, like the big reveal of the two villains and
right.
The ghost face. I mean, that was a throwback to Friday the 13th. Mm-hmm. Where you can get that mask anywhere. I mean, it's just a hockey mask. It's not right. It's not the mask. It's the man beneath the mask. That mask can be found anywhere. And even, you know, they kill the Fonz. I mean, come on. I mean, like, there's just so... They killed Drew Barrymore. Like, you can't kill Drew Barrymore. She's romantic because she's Gertie. I mean, come on.
The Scream was crazy. It was a lot gorier than I had expected it to be when I first saw the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. He did an excellent job with that.
Scream was really good.
It was casted very well. The folks that were in it were good. You know, the two villainous guys. They were like opposites of each other, but they worked well together.
Uh huh. And well, they're both. The one guy's kind of like bad boy boyfriend, so he's right. He's automatically a suspect just by.
The other one's just a goofy weirdo.
Yeah, but the other guy's kind of like comic relief, but he's very likable.
He's Shaggy.
Yeah, he's very likable, so you never suspected him. Even though he's, like, if you watch it again, he gives clues, because he's always the one that, like, spouts off the, like, when she's talking about, like, getting broken up with or whatever, like, you're not going to get laid or whatever. He's the one that's like spouts off things like he just kind of says them under his breath or kind of sighed like, oh, if this is a horror movie, you'd be the first one to die. And
right.
Then like later on.
Yeah.
And because Drew Barrymore was his girlfriend. Like she broke up with him. Like they say that early on. It's like, oh, you know, it's like, how you? He's like, oh, man. You know, but hey.
But you don't pick up on it.
You don't pick up on it until you watch the movie and then you go back and there's clues. Which makes it multi-layered, which makes it even cooler.
Right.
So, I love that video lag.
Yeah.
With that cameraman, so he's watching it, and he watches the ghost, so he's like, oh, I need to go warn him, and he opens the thing, and he's right there, right because there. It had like the 30-second lag.
Yeah, 30-second head delay on it.
And,
it was a great movie. It was great really jumps, stuff. Man. It had some really good jumps, because you didn't know which way the movie was going to go.
Right. Well, also, it was the first... It's the one where they used technology smart. So, cell phones weren't everywhere. Not everybody had them. It was still a pager world back then. Mm-hmm. But some people had them. Upper affluent people had them. And people with maybe single parents, for a reason, might have them or whatever. But they didn't treat it like it was some kind of space technology. Like, they knew what they were, and it wasn't special that they were around. They didn't treat it like it was weird.
Right.
Which a lot of movies did at the time. It's like, oh, you kids on your cell phone, your pager phones, or whatever. It's like, no, they knew what they were for. They knew what they were about. So, followed up with Scream 2. Wasn't a huge fan of Scream 2.
Nah, me neither. The first one, the original one, just blew everybody away. Yeah. You couldn't compete with it.
I just called the story done at the end of that one.
Yeah.
Scream 2, I saw that one, and same formula.
Yeah.
Basically, exact same formula. Two killers. That one you least expect. That's kind of your buddy.
But they just couldn't remake Scream 1.
Yeah.
It was almost a perfect movie. Like I said, it was casted well. The storyline was good. Had plenty of jumps. Totally threw everybody at the end of the movie. You know, nobody expected it. You know, at the end, whenever they're trying to set it up to make it look like they had been stabbed by the guy, too. He's like, oh, you went too deep, man. The whole scene is just, damn.
Well, yeah, he's going to go ahead and take care of him, too.
Right. Give me my turn now.
Yeah, that was good. And that was that... Like that late '90s Brat Pack, Yeah. Know, Matthew Lillard and Skeet Ulrich.
Nev Campbell,
that whole group. I mean, Courtney Cox was a veteran at that time, but
yeah.
Everybody else.
David Arquette.
Yeah. He didn't die because he's a virgin. Yeah. Nick said, of Jamie Kennedy. But you saw him get stabbed.
Yep.
You saw David Arquette, like, at the, you know, he's get stabbed. You're like, well, and you saw Skeet Ulrich die too.
Yep.
The Ghostface Killer stabs the hell out of him, and he falls over dead. And you're like, well, it wasn't him. Then he comes back later, and you're like, oh shit, movie fans, special effects, good stuff.
Which, there may be a Scream movie poster in one of those giveaway packs, too, by the way. A very nice theater-sized one, so...
Nice. Well, yeah, the last one I've got is Scream 3 in 2000, but I didn't even see it.
I don't think I saw it, either.
I didn't like the second one. I didn't care after that.
And like I said, Scream 1 was just a great movie. You don't want to spoil anything, you know?
But we did... I forgot to say, at the beginning... before he started making Last House on the Left, he was actually a X-rated film director.
Really? I did not know that. I did not come up with that in my research.
He made, quote, many, many hardcore X-rated films, unquote, under pseudonyms. So I would really be curious in the age of the internet now to dig up...
Some Wes Craven.
Some Wes Craven porn. Just, like, see if it's scary at all.
I wonder if that's a way to break into the horror business. Like start shooting...
Like the pizza man shows up with a knife or something.
With the mask on.
It's like, I'm going to stab you with this dong. You're like... Walk, 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 walk. I think a lot of people did that back then. You know?
It was a way to make money in Hollywood.
It was a way to cut in, yeah, for sure.
I was thinking about a story, but I don't think I should tell it on here. But a friend of mine, I won't mention his name or anything, but he actually, you know how they have fluffers? They have fluffers for women also.
He was one of those?
Yeah, when he was in college, that's how he made extra money. He was a fluffer.
Nice.
And the way I found out, some of his friends from, he went to USC, and some of his, he played football for USC. And some of his friends came down to visit, and they kept calling him Fluff. And finally, I was like, dude, why in the hell are they calling you Fluff? And one of them goes, you don't know? And I was no, I sure don't. He tried to shut him up, but it came out, man. Yeah, he did that for a couple of months. Make some extra cash. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So then, of course, I was like, anybody famous? Anybody I know?
It sucks, you know, whenever you're, like, at your workaday job, and you know, like, I read a tweet the other day, it was on, you ever see the Chive, the website, the Chive?
Yeah.
They have, like, the funny tweets or whatever, and it was a tweet from the official Pornhub Twitter page, and it was like, when you think about it, watching porn is really just watching people at work.
It's true.
Dude, that's it's so true, but damn. man, we always get off in the weeds. But you know, hey, it's relevant because he was an X-rated porn director or whatever.
And we always come back, so.
Here's to the man, the myth.
Yeah, here's Mr. definitely toast a glass to a legend.
Mr. Wes Craven. August 2nd, 1939 to August 30th, 2015.
I didn't realize it was August 2nd. I'm August 3rd. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So your birthday's tomorrow.
Yeah.
So you didn't just have it.
My birthday's tomorrow? Oh, yeah. No, it's the 3rd. It just drops on the 7th.
Oh, shit. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So, not there yet. We passed it. Yeah.
Hey, where's my brain? Porn. There it is.
Yes, it is. You got it all mixed up now. Think about fluffers and everything else.
That's it. All right, guys. That's it for now.
Appreciate you tuning in.
Keep it scary.
Later. Yeah.
skies.